Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Great. Time for some science. Let's crack into, I saw that there was a new form of carbon.
Indeed. Okay, so quick chemistry lesson here. Who knows what an allotrope is?
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Okay, so for many, many years, it was thought that carbon would only exist in two different forms, okay? Those forms, diamond, which is pure carbon, and graphite, which is the lead in your pencil, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And they're both made up of just of carbon. Carbon atoms all bonded together in different ways. And which one's the most stable? If you had your choice, diamond or pencil lead, which one do you
reckon?
I'm
putting a vote down for diamond.
Okay.
I'm going to second that. I'll go for diamond.
Okay, well, you're both wrong. There we go. Gotcha. There we go. So the most stable form of carbon is, in fact, graphite. Okay?
Okay,
so all of those with diamond rings on your fingers, listeners, they are, I hate to tell you, slowly but inexorably turning into pencil lead.
So actually what I actually want on my ring finger is a giant pencil. Is that what I should be asking
Eventually.
For?
Eventually. It takes a few million years, that's all. And a bit of temperature.
Love lasts
anyway.
Forever, doesn't it? Ah.
Very good. However, okay, so, and then in the 80s they invented these things called buckyballs, which were big balls of carbon atoms that looked like soccer balls. So the carbon atoms were arranged at the vertices of soccer balls, and if you look closely at a soccer ball, you'll see it's made of alternating hexagons and pentagons. And you've got 60 carbon atoms in C60. It looks like a soccer ball. And just recently, like as in the last week, some scientists from Switzerland and Britain have reported that they have made a ring of carbon now, quite appropriate with what we were talking about before.
Oh, yeah.
So this contains 18 carbon atoms. And it is quite amazing, actually, because in chemistry, we do chemical reactions. So basically, we get a test tube of one thing, a test tube of another thing, you mix them together, and you hope like hell that things are going to work out. All these little molecules are going to be reacting together and basically doing what they want to do, and they'll come and give you a product, which may or may not be the stuff that you want. However, these guys have used mechanical force essentially to now make a new molecule. So nobody had made the C18 ring of carbon atoms
so
before.
So what is this ring?
Well, what they managed to do was to take something that was very, very close to this C18 ring and put it on a actually a sodium chloride base of all things, just common salt, and they cool it down to 5 Kelvin, which is about 5 degrees above absolute zero. It's about -268 degrees Celsius.
That's chilly. That is chilly.
And they can actually manipulate the molecules with a thing called an atomic force microscope. So what they can do is actually pick out single atoms, and they're doing this mechanically. So rather than relying on what nature wants to do, they're actually making nature do what they want it to do. So they can pick out single molecules out of this precursor molecule,
right,
which are carbon monoxide molecules. So they take this thing, as I said, that looks very, very much like the C18 ring, put it on the surface, and then pick off carbon monoxide molecules, and that just leaves the C18 ring. And it really is quite remarkable. Absolutely amazing.
What does that mean? Because so there's diamond, there's graphite, and
yes,
now there's C18.
Yes, and now the C18. Now, it's only stable at 5 Kelvin.
which helpful for a chilly night.
Yes, so it's not really going to be of enormous use at the moment for anything. But this whole concept of being able to mechanically manipulate individual molecules, and they made a grand total of 12 molecules of this stuff. That's all.
That's not big, eh?
That's not big.
trying to quantify it.
Okay, so try and quantify it like you're breathing about 10 to the 23 molecules of stuff right at the moment. So
not much.
In and out. So not much. Yeah, yeah. So it's really, really quite amazing stuff. And I'm sure that this is going to be a big thing in the future.
So does that mean in the future we can start picking out different molecules and making new things?
Yeah, absolutely.
Running wild with that.
Yes.
Right.
Most definitely.
Okay.
I think this is, you know, very, very exciting. So there is another allotrope of carbon out there now. So you've got your diamond, your graphite, your buckyballs, your carbon nanotubes, which we didn't talk about, and now you've got a ring of pure carbon
atoms. I want that on my ring, you know. Very rare. Next, we've got the PCR inventor. What's PCR?
Yeah, PCR, polymerase chain reaction. which you may have heard of if you watch lots of sort of true crime programs on YouTube, which I have to admit to because they're just compelling. You shouldn't watch them, but you do.
I like a bit of BuzzFeed on Solve sometimes. So what is PCR?
PCR, okay, so you know how they're always talking about DNA evidence in court now, okay? So about, 25, 30-odd years ago, they couldn't rely on DNA evidence because basically the concept didn't exist or the method to be able to utilize this didn't exist. So normally, excuse me, when you get a crime scene, you might get a single hair or something like that, or a little, you know, spot of semen or something, you know, something like that. Very, very small amounts of DNA. And up until this guy came along, those amounts of DNA were too small to use in any sort of evidential way, just because there was so little of the DNA there. Okay, so they didn't have the methods to be able to analyze it. But then Kerry Mullis came along, and he was working at a private company in 1983, and he had a brainwave of how he would be able to take a single piece of DNA and amplify it, copy it. Copy it so that you could make millions and millions and millions of copies in a very short time,
Is that what they do in the police with the crime and the magnifying glasses?
well, they take this stuff to the lab, you know, and they carry out this polymerase chain reaction on these very, very small amounts of DNA. And as I say, that amplifies it to an amount where they can then analyze it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this makes exact copies of a strand of DNA, basically. And he's a very, very fascinating guy. So the reason we're talking about him, he just passed away on August the 7th. His name was Kerry Mullis. He got the Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 1993.
Well deserving.
For doing this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it really has changed the face of the legal system, really. Because prior to this, people were working on things like hair similarity. You know, you'd find a hair at a crime scene, and you'd compare it and, you know, you'd look under a microscope and all this. And this has been now thoroughly discredited, and so many people have been convicted, you know, and put away for life on the basis of this totally discredited technique.
How accurate is DNA evidence in crimes?
They talk about in terms of probabilities, and your probabilities are normally in the very high millions to billions against the probability that it could have come from somebody else.
Right, so it's just pretty much definite.
It's about as definite as you can get, really. Okay, yeah. So, you know, this was a great idea of his, and I just happen to have his autobiography. And he's he was an interesting fellow, shall we say. He was a surfer dude. He dropped LSD in the 60s. He was a big fan of that. He reckoned that dropping LSD did more for him than attending any of the lectures that he ever did.
Wow.
He believes that he was visited by aliens, he was visited by aliens. I've got a couple of quotes from him which give you some idea he was like. So he's talking about, in his autobiography, he talks about how he came up with the idea. He was driving his car with his girlfriend one day off to their cabin in the woods or something, blah 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 blah. And that relationship broke up at the same time that he made his big finding and everything. So he said, there is a special place in your brain, I think, reserved for, quote, melancholy of relationships past, unquote. It grows and prospers as life progresses, forcing you finally, against your better judgment, to listen to country music.
Oh. He's got a sense of humour and a bit of relationship advice there for everyone.
So, yeah, it's a shame to have lost him. He made, you know, it's an extraordinary advance, and that Nobel Prize, very, very, very well deserved.
Well deserved. Because it changes, I guess, law and science and a bit of everything.
Absolutely. And it's not just in the legal system, but, you know, it's used scientifically as well. And, you know, just, it's wonderful stuff. Yeah. So
next up, we have subaquatic spiders, which is slightly different to this very, very cool chap we were talking about before. I mean, unless they're cool as well,
let's say inspired by subaquatic spiders. So there's only one spider that can live underwater, and that's called the diving bell spider. And I've got the throats today. Sorry, folks. It must have been the 8 o'clock lecture I gave. Gosh. And the way that this guy lives underwater is it traps a bubble of air on its abdomen.
Yes.
And so it then can go underwater and it can breathe that bubble of air on its abdomen.
Ah.
Okay. Now, normally air bubbles underwater like to sort of shoot up, and, you know, because they're less dense than water. So how does the spider keep the air bubble on its abdomen? It's got all of these hairs on its abdomen that are what we call hydrophobic. In other words, they hate water.
Okay? Like waterproof.
Yeah, very exactly. Waterproof. Exactly. Very, very waterproof, okay? And you can quite happily snuggle a bubble of air into something that is very, very waterproof, very, very hydrophobic. And
that's amazing. Sorry.
I think two's a little
that's
bit scary.
That's amazing.
It is.
How long does the bubble stay there for?
Oh, until they breathe it.
Like they can run out of the oxygen, they have to go back and get more.
Yes, so they go up and get another bubble and away they go.
I'm imagining a very cute spider hugging like a little, just on its lip, just a little bit of a bubble.
Look at the picture, it doesn't look cute.
Do they live, are there any in New Zealand?
Good question.
I hope not.
However, we're getting a little bit on...
Sorry.
We're focusing on the spider and not the chemistry, for goodness sake. That's what this is all about. So some chemists were inspired by this spider, the fact that they could do this. And they are involved in the very, very noble cause of trying to do something with carbon dioxide and getting rid of it, in other words, or turning it into something useful. And the problem with carbon dioxide is that it's a gas. And if you're trying to do something with it through electrochemistry, putting electrodes and reducing the carbon dioxide, giving it electrons so that it can do stuff, turning it into useful molecules like ethanol and stuff like that. The trouble is, how do you stick a gas to an electrode? How do you stick a gas to a solid? So these guys thought, okay, this spider's got a good idea here. So it can hold that gas close to itself. So why don't we take our electrode and cover it with really, really hydrophobic material.
Okay? Similar to the ones on the spider.
Similar to the ones on the spider. And they do that, and then they find that the CO2 sticks onto the electrode really, really nicely. And once you stick it to the electrode, then you can do all the chemistry on it. And that's really, really useful. So they have found that they can turn carbon dioxide, which is a nasty gas, into ethene or ethanol, both of which are very, very useful in the chemicals industry. And obviously, if you end up turning them back into CO2, you can do it again, okay? So this is very, very nice stuff, and bio-inspired, as we say. So that good old diving bell spider, it didn't really know it, but it's inspired... some really, really, really nice chemistry. And it's nice to see people thinking. You know, this is people using their brains and thinking, how can we do this, and taking lessons from nature.
A bit of an outside-of-the-box thought.
Absolutely, yes.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for today, Alan.
Not a problem. Good luck with your Monday gig from now on, Sherry.
Thank you.
Sad to lose you.
Leaving Wednesday.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.